You are listening to the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials about the state of Minnesota's response to COVID-19. Today, we welcome back Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It is your opportunity to ask questions about the response and plans during this current COVID-19 pandemic. I am Heidi Holton. I am live from the KEXC studios on the sunny banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you didn't get a chance to call or send in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org, or you can call and leave a message at 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with the 18 community radio stations of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, bringing you COVID-19 information for Minnesota. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being back with us today.
It's my pleasure. Hey, Heidi, how are you?
Good. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving and everybody's healthy in your family.
We did. Thank you. And I think the biggest challenge that we had during Thanksgiving is just our leftovers situation. Yeah. So we froze a lot of it, and we're just going to keep working through those turkey sandwiches.
Yes, I agree. Well, let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. Do you think we're going to see another surge from the people that did gather or travel during that time?
Well, I think many Minnesotans did exactly what we asked them to do and celebrated Thanksgiving with their own families. Unfortunately, I do think there was a handful of folks who did travel, and I do think that we will see an increase. But also, you know, we are in this time where we're grateful for Minnesotans getting on board with us again as we have, dialed things back. And I think we'll also see the difference there, that will be working and we'll see infection rates go down. But we're still in a really precarious spot with the pandemic, with our really high infection rates and death rates each day. So it's just, you know, the continued message that folks need to take this seriously.
Yeah, you know, the last time that we talked, that was Friday, November 20th, you said to me that you and I probably both know people who have COVID, that things are changing rapidly. You asked me that, and I said yes. And within 24 hours, I knew 5 more people that had COVID. I want to talk about this change and how, you know, we got to kind of wake up again to where we might have been when this pandemic first started. We heard from someone this week who said that their friend is a public health nurse, told them that they're going through a really bad time with COVID, and it's worse than we hear on the news, and they want to know your view on this.
Well, you know, Heidi, after we talked to, there certainly are more people that I know who have it, and a very dear friend of mine is in the hospital, who is 42, in good health, and this has struck this individual particularly hard. So again, just constant reminders to take this seriously, and I venture to guess that more of your listeners know someone who has been infected and has fallen ill. We're going through a really bad time right now, and it's difficult, I think, for the news to show how difficult it is, because for most people, you know, how they hear about COVID or the infection rates is primarily what gets reported through the numbers. And so I think a lot of Minnesotans and frankly, people across the country have become desensitized to the numbers, and they're just, you know, figures that can't possibly convey the pain of losing a loved one or being intubated in the intensive care unit. And these numbers can't describe the loneliness that our elders are experiencing in long-term care facilities or the experiences that our children are missing out on by not being able to see their friends or be in the classroom. So I think it's just an important reminder that these numbers are real people. And, you know, we need to keep them in mind and show them, our fellow community members and neighbors and relatives that we care about them and love them by following good public health guidelines. But I would also say this, one of the most powerful tools I think that we have right now of really seeing what our healthcare providers are going through right now and people who have been impacted by COVID-19 is the glimpse that photojournalists are giving to us within ICUs and hospitals across the state of Minnesota. The Star Tribune in particular has done really powerful work around this, and I would just encourage Minnesotans to really look, to see these images and in those who are patients, but also in the faces and expressions and the eyes of those who are treating these individuals every day. They are on the front lines doing God's work. And, you know, we need to grapple with these images because they are, you know, in those rooms, caring for people every day. And I can't imagine the kind of toll it is having on their overall mental health. And, you know, the least that we can do is try to grapple with what it is that they're experiencing every day, often for 12 hours or sometimes 24-hour shifts.
You know, every day I'm looking at the numbers because we're reporting on, you know, our local communities that KAXE and KBXE covers. And I get immune to the numbers as well. And I try to remind myself, like today the numbers just came out, 61 additional deaths happened yesterday. And, you know, if there was a car accident, if there was a tornado where 61 people were killed, we would be rallying around those communities. And that would be a once, you know, one time a year that that might happen, or a couple times a year. And I think it's, you're right, we got to think of this numbers as people.
That's right. And, you know, of the deaths of the 61 individuals that we lost yesterday, they ranged in age from 48 to 98. You know, and we all have people in our lives who range from, you know, 48 to 98. And so it's also how we are able to manage our own mental health right now, right, is by being desensitized, because this is so much and living through a pandemic is really hard. But I just, as much as you can handle so that it reminds you and your loved ones to wear those masks and to practice social distancing and just, you know, be safe until we all have the ability to be vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, before we get into more questions from listeners, I want to talk about Monday. It's the deadline to apply for this housing assistance program. Can you tell us about it? Who's eligible for it?
Yeah, sure. So in August, the governor and I announced that we had $100 million that was available for folks across Minnesota who've fallen behind on their rent or on their mortgage payments. And the deadline to apply for that assistance is Monday at midnight. So we just really want to encourage Minnesotans to apply for those dollars if you need that support. And although it's, you know, we are in December, it even means that if you missed your rent payment on Tuesday, on December 1st, that is still eligible. So just encouraging people, it's super easy. Either call 211 or go to 211unitedway.org, and you can get assistance there for rent, utilities, or your mortgage. There's still some money left over, and, you know, we don't want to leave any of that on the table because we know that the need is there. There is no shame in asking for help right now. You know, as I've said many times before, we've never been through a global pandemic in our lifetime. And so if you need a little extra help, there's no shame. We're all stressed enough as it is. There's relief that is available for you. You know, it's really easy to qualify. Just call that number and there'll be folks who are ready to answer your call and to help connect you with assistance.
I want to talk a little bit more about what people are hearing, you know, whether it is on TV or social media or for friends and neighbors. I am grateful each week that you take the time to talk to us. I trust that you're giving us the factual information that you are getting from scientists and leaders. I trust sources like Dr. Michael Osterholm's weekly podcast. But it seems like people believe what they want to believe, like this next question from Bob in Bovee. He said, I've seen posts online that say that there are studies that the amount of deaths due to COVID is not that alarming, that it's no different than death rates in any year. I've also heard that people say that any death now is attributed to COVID. What are your thoughts on this?
So, Bob from Bovee, that is fundamentally untrue. you know, the number of deaths in Minnesota is not being hyped by the media. We have a very rigorous process for assigning the cause of death, and it's a determination that is made by doctors and isn't influenced by politics. But I know, Heidi, we've heard this over and over again, and I'm sure, you know, you've seen it on social media, that, and we've heard it even from some of our elected leaders, that COVID is no worse than the flu. But to that, you know, I just say that you to know how bad it actually is, you only have to look at, you know, the number, which is, according to the CDC, 22,000 people died of the flu nationwide in the 2019-2020 flu season. That number pales compared to the 328,000 people who have died from COVID-19. It is not the flu. It is so much worse. And that is what the numbers are telling us. So I just encourage everyone, you know, like, pay attention to what is coming out of the Department of Health, from the CDC, and not from your buddy that you went to high school with on Facebook.
That is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. How'd you know my buddy's posting that?
This is our, mine are
too. I know. It's our statewide conversation on Minnesota's response and plans for COVID-19. I want to talk some about testing now and testing capacity. Minnesota has really ramped up in this area. There are easy ways to get a test, even if you don't have symptoms now. Drive-up testing, at-home testing, more traditional testing in a healthcare setting. We had this question from someone in Minneapolis. They said, there has been some discussion in our family about testing and the cost of testing, and they are hoping you can clear this up. For the state testing centers, it says that anyone can get a test for free, but if you have insurance, you need to provide insurance information. Our insurance company is telling us that they will only pay for COVID testing if a doctor orders and administers the test. To us, that sounds like insurance won't cover the testing at a state center. We don't want to lie and say we have insurance, but we also don't want to get stuck paying for the test. What's your understanding of this situation?
Sure. So I really appreciate that question. And so, you know, with regards to insurance companies, at community testing sites sponsored by the test will always be available at no cost. And so while some people may experience billing from insurance when visiting their local clinic or primary care provider, people will never receive a bill after visiting a community testing site. And if you do, after attending a community testing site, you can call the Commerce Department's Consumer Services Center, and that number is 651-539-1600, to let them know, because you absolutely should not be charged. Your insurance company is responsible for paying for that. So we ask people, again, at those community testing sites, if you do have insurance, to please provide it. But again, if you don't, you're not going to be turned away. But if you get charged at these community testing sites, you can absolutely file a complaint, because you should not be charged for that. You know, testing itself is available to anyone who believes that they need a COVID-19 test with or without insurance. And, you know, again, we wanted to make it as low barrier as possible, so at these community testing sites, you will not be charged.
We had a question this week about masking. Evelyn wrote to us. She said, by now, people should know how to wear a mask properly, but I see so many people wearing it under their noses. Do you think they don't understand? Do they not care? I see some of the employees at my local grocery store with masks under their noses, but it's everywhere that I see this. How do we make people understand how to wear a mask? How do we make people care? I am disheartened. Evelyn.
Oh, Evelyn, I am disheartened too. And, you know, especially when mask wearing is just literally the easiest thing that we can do. And it's how we show that we care for our fellow Minnesotans and our neighbors. And I think, fortunately, most people do care and they are masking up, I think, you know, but we still see that. So I do think, you know, as we're talking about vaccines that will become available in the coming weeks and months, that is a light at the end of a very dark tunnel. But I think it's going to be important that as we continue to see individuals in our state get vaccinated, that doesn't mean that people should stop wearing their masks, right? So we're going to have to be super intentional about how we message that. You know, the one piece of advice I would have for you, Evelyn, is to, you know, bring a 7-year-old with you when you go to the store who has no problem saying very loudly, "Mommy, that man isn't wearing his mask over his nose." And then quickly seeing that man put his mask over his nose when called out by a 7-year-old. So there is a little grace that children are given, right, when they tell the truth. But, you know, I know that it's frustrating, and the best thing that we can do is to just, you know, continue to model that behavior. But I'd say if, you know, you see situations at your, you know, local grocery store or, you know, out in the community where there are also businesses that are engaging in unsafe behavior or poor mask wearing, you know, that's also something that you can bring up to that business or, you know, reach out to, you know, the COVID line to report if people are just being unsafe.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the guidelines we're living under right now, the Stay Safe guidelines, where bars and restaurants are only open for takeout, gyms, entertainment venues are not currently able to be open. I don't like to dip into politics very much, but I want to give you a chance to respond to this, because we heard from someone this week who saw something that their senator, Justin Eichhorn, had posted on social media. He was voicing his concerns about Black Friday. He wrote, "Unfortunately, multiple billion-dollar corporations that fund Democrats have been able to stay open while small businesses and restaurants are forced to close." He referred to the governor's administration as emperors and that it's time to end this shutdown and the emergency powers of your administration. First, I wonder if you'd help us understand why big box stores have been open throughout this entire pandemic. And another listener who wrote to us, who owns a family restaurant, is very confused about this too, because they're doing everything they can to provide takeout and provide free food for healthcare workers. And we're just very disheartened to see all the shopping on Black Friday. So tell us a little bit about what your response to this.
Yeah. So first of all, I would just direct Senator Eichhorn in particular to look at his own infection rates in the community that he represents, right? And that is why we have dialed back, because COVID is spreading and there are particular settings in which it is spreading. And that includes places like bars and restaurants where people don't need to consistently, you know, don't essentially consistently wear masks because they're eating and drinking, and people become more lax as they consume more alcohol. And that's where we're seeing the spread. And so that is, you know, why we have made those incredibly difficult decisions. But what I'd also say is, you know, I agree with Senator Eichhorn that we should be focusing on our small businesses, you know, at least for this particular holiday season. And, you know, I think it's important to remind people that we have some really incredible small businesses here in the state. And so my family's focusing on purchasing our holiday gifts from these small businesses, and would encourage other people to go ahead and do so. And as we're looking towards, you know, the upcoming special session, we are trying to work out a proposal where we're giving some relief to small businesses who have absolutely been impacted. And, you know, the difference between these, you know, big box stores or grocery stores is that, you know, since the beginning of the pandemic, and this has been consistent across, you know, states across the country, is that people need access to, you know, food supplies and that type of thing. And that's why those remain open, along with continuing to wear masks and practice social distancing and good hygiene when you're frequently, you know, these stores. Retail continues to remain open because that is where people are consistently wearing masks and not eating or drinking during that time. But with this proposal, we're focusing on small businesses, but we're also, you know, we've had some good news with the economic forecast that just came out earlier in the week. We've got a short-term surplus and a smaller deficit But we know that the pandemic has disproportionately impacted working families. So we need to focus on giving additional relief to those working families. Families who are struggling, who are needy families, should be eligible for an additional $500 a month. Is something that we are advocating for as well. And I hope that Senator Eichhorn and our friends on the other side of the aisle can help advocate for children and families who have been particularly hard hit. To the restaurant owner, I know how difficult this is, and I am grateful to your business for everything that you're doing to provide takeout and support, especially for our healthcare workers who are on the front lines. But again, over 70% of new COVID outbreaks in Minnesota from June to November had a direct link back to weddings and receptions, restaurants, and these kinds of gatherings and late nights in bars. So your behavior in a retail or grocery store is very different than when you're in a restaurant and bar. And so, while retail is able to open up at 100% capacity, the expectation of social distancing, wearing masks, and other public health guidelines are there to, reduce the risk of the spread. And small business owner, restaurant owner, we're trying to get you some additional relief too.
We would love to hear from our listeners stories of how you're supporting your local community, local bars and restaurants, and gift giving. You can send in an email to COVID@ampers.org. In our remaining time, we want to focus in on vaccines. We heard from a lot of folks this week. We heard from someone who wants to know about the plan that Governor Walz has made for the distribution of the vaccine. Who is helping him figure this out? What are his main concerns? How big of an undertaking will it be? And what could go wrong? Just a couple of, easy questions there for you.
Really, really easy questions. So we are talking a lot about the vaccine these days, and, which I am incredibly excited to talk about, because it means that, we have an opportunity to feel hopeful. And the COVID pandemic is too big for one state to tackle alone. And so teams of experts and elected officials have been working really hard on the global, national, state, and local level to fight COVID. So the distribution of the vaccine is just another good example of that. At the federal level, we're using the logistics expertise of the military to develop a plan to get the vaccines at the door as soon as possible. And our Department of Health has a person on the CDC advisory committee that is making recommendations about how to distribute the vaccines. So we've had a seat at the table as we've discussed who will get the first doses and what will become available. So in the coming months, you will see cooperation at an unprecedented level between governments, healthcare systems, hospitals, clinics, doctors, nurses, and pharmacists. And what I also hope you will see, and I feel pretty good that you also will see, is a really bipartisan approach to the vaccine and lifting up the importance of people being vaccinated. We're also reaching out to communities who've traditionally been underserved. So in the African-American community, Somali community, Native folks, Asian communities will see outreach and engagement to ensure that no groups of Minnesotans are left behind. The question, what could go wrong? I can't promise that there won't be any glitches, but we're working really hard to catch and address them as they come up. I'm most worried that people are getting so tired of this pandemic that they'll let their guard down and we'll have unnecessary spread and death because we're not masking and observing social distancing as people are starting to get the vaccine. So that's, our task is just to continue to make sure that the people follow those healthcare protocols. And I'm also worried that a lot of people will choose not to get vaccinated. This only works if we are in it together and do it together. So, my hope is that you will see leaders all across the state of Minnesota from, several different communities who are modeling just how important this is so that folks don't get their information from Facebook, but get it from credible sources.
Yeah, and it's understandable. Everyone is tired of this pandemic. But in a conversation I had earlier this week with some local doctors, they said, imagine how tired we are of this pandemic right now. And so, think of it as a way to help your friends and neighbors who are healthcare providers right now, or who are, you know, driving school buses or doing anything like that. I mean, it's keeping everybody safe by you being open to this vaccine that's coming our way.
This is sort of one of those, like, who are the people in your neighborhood moments, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, we see just the folks who are just so critical to, you know, to community are really the people who are on the front lines. And so as a way to support them, getting that vaccine is just one of the ways that we show that we care about our neighbors.
Another question came in about vaccine. They want to know how the vaccine works. From what I've heard, they said, it makes it so you don't have symptoms of COVID-19, but you can still catch it and spread it to someone else. Is that correct?
So, you know, what we know about the vaccine is that, we're still learning, but this is a newer class of vaccine called messenger RNA. And I'm not a scientist, so I'm going to give you a very high level view here, but messenger RNA or mRNA is a set of instructions to your body to make a harmless protein that mimics a similar one that's present in the COVID-19 virus. It's called a spike protein. And so your body's immune system identifies the spike protein as something that doesn't belong and helps develop a response to wipe it out. So, like, in a nutshell, the vaccine teaches your body's immune system how to fight COVID-19. The phase 3 trials specifically look at the possibility of being a carrier, not experiencing symptoms, but still being able to transmit the disease. So if the FDA authorizes the use of the vaccine, it means that that would have been reviewed as part of the process to authorize the use of the new vaccine. The vaccine trials have looked at the ability of the vaccine to prevent disease, and the current vaccines, the vaccines that are currently undergoing review are very effective at that. So we'll certainly learn more about whether vaccinated people are also less likely to transmit the virus. We're still learning, but more information about this can be found on the CDC's website if you wanna geek out a little bit more look at more of that data. But here's the deal. When the vaccine becomes available, I'm going to get it, and I hope that you get it too.
Yeah. And get that flu shot. I promised you last time we talked, and I did. It was so easy.
Heidi,
I don't know what I was.
Made my whole day.
I don't know what I was waiting for, but there we go. Hey, before we go, I want to get this question in. It's from Tom in Palisade. He said, we're hearing that we should not travel for Christmas. If we do, we should get tested before and after and quarantine on arrival. Does this apply to car travel as well as air travel? And would it apply to one-way travel to another empty house, meaning snowbirds?
Tom, I don't want to be a Grinch here, but I do want you and your family to be around for next Christmas. And so I'm just going to say that, you know, the CDC recommends that people don't travel at all. That continues to be our recommendation here in Minnesota, celebrating at home with members in your own household. And we're asking people to stay apart during the holiday season to ensure that we can gather next year. And I know that's hard. But we'll just, you know, say the CDC says that if you travel, which they do not recommend, you should be tested for COVID 1 to 3 days before traveling and then tested again 3 to 5 days after you return. I would just ask that you find alternative ways to celebrate the holiday, dinner at home, driving through to see holiday decorations, shopping online, a virtual dinner night with your family. There's just things that we can do to protect each other this holiday season. And I think it's worth that sacrifice to ensure that we're not spreading infection and more people are losing family members when it's unnecessary.
Just one more reminder that people can apply for housing assistance up until midnight on Monday. How can they do that?
So So they can go to 211unitedway.org or just call 211. And this is just, again, available for anyone who has not been able to pay their rent or mortgage or utility payments due to COVID-19. So either a job or income loss, illness, or similar reasons. So if you are in need, please, please, please apply.
It's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Thank you for speaking clearly and factually with the people of Minnesota in these conversations. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much. Take good care.
You too. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at KAXE.org, or if you would like to ask the Lieutenant Governor a question, email COVID@AMPRS.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Stay safe. Thanks for listening.